Good day, listening public. Today is April 20th, 2020, and thank you for listening to General Disclosure, the podcast from SAN. My name is Dan Silverman, and I'm joined, as always, by co-host Cheryl Dowd.
Hi, everybody.
Cheryl, are you present and accounted for? Yes, you are. All right. Today, we're lucky to be joined by Katie Hoffman, who is the who works in the Office of Assessment and Accreditation Support, University of San Francisco. She is the stalwart SAN coordinator there. Katie, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Hi, everybody.
So first things first, when I think of USF, I think of Bill Russell. Are there any other notable nuggets or grads or something that you jump to when you're introducing your school?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of our most recent notables is a USF alum is London Breed, who is the mayor of San Francisco.
The mayor, okay, you're going to have to, yeah, I'm such an East Coast provincial guy.
One of the first mayors who imposed or did a shelter in place order here on the West Coast.
Oh, okay, so a pioneer.
Yep, we have a lot of notable alums too. I think, and then there are people who are just part of the community that are well known. And this may be rumor too. I was a student at USF. And so in my time there, Mel Gibson, I think one of his children may have attended with us. This is all speculation.
Well, he keeps a low profile, I'm sure.
Yeah. And then I've heard that Danny Glover has worked out at our gym.
Okay. Well, stars, they're just like the rest of us. Now some of our conversation is going to be more kind of COVID tinged than others. Although I think as of now, it's kind of hard to have anything be free of it, but we do start out most of our conversations with the same two questions that sound a little different now, I guess. The first one is defining your career or your field in any way you'd like. Why do you do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I sort of fell into doing state authorization work by way of the provost's office at the University of San Francisco. If I back up even more, I wanted to return to USF because I was an alum there and I loved my experience at a small liberal arts college, and especially loved being in the city of San Francisco. And then zooming forward, got a job doing administration for a teaching center on campus, which is a center for teaching excellence. I spent a lot of time thinking about pedagogy and teaching and fell in love with the idea of that we're just constantly always learning. And even the professionals or even the experts are in need of constant development and support. I think support's probably the better word. And sort of platforms where we can learn to explore what we're doing, explore how to teach better, explore how to be better learners. And that led me to being interested in assessment and sort of how does assessment feed into other parts of our lives? How does assessment, how can assessment be something that is a new field or a developing field of research? Because assessment is just basically, what are we doing? What are our students learning? How well are they learning? And how can we say that they're learning what they're learning? And then being in the assessment office, part of my job duty, a job description was state authorizations. And at first I thought it was just going to be a small part of my job, but really it takes up a lot of time that I've learned. So for me, I wanted to have challenges and more responsibility, and that's what this position is. I described it to somebody when I was first starting out a year ago, so I've been in my position about a year, that it's a lot of sort of mystery solving. There are a lot of overlay pieces. It's like those books that you open up where you're looking at the ancient Roman Colosseum, but there's a transfer overlay that sort of shows the history of what it used to look like, sort of like an image. And so when you overlay the pieces that go into state authorization and education, online education compliance or distance learning compliance, that's kind of what you're doing essentially. And it's taken me a really long time to learn how to read regulations, how to know where to look for them, how to find help. And believe me, I found a lot of help in communities. So other people who are doing the same kinds of work, largely through WCET SAN, but also through smaller state authorization networks in California, because as you know, we're a non-SARA state. So the extra support is appreciated there. I feel like I've sort of wandered around a little bit in my answer.
That's okay. If higher ed were eliminated, what would you do?
I would start a community center where we can figure out how to learn together again. I think that's kind of one of the lessons that's happening right now is, what do we do when some of the supports are pulled away or some of the usual habitual, modalities in our life are removed, and we're having to learn right now in this situation with COVID-19, how to keep learning, how to keep connected. And I think if you were to pull away those very large structures such as higher education, you know, the need would still be there. And the joy would still be there in figuring out how to do things together on a grassroots level.
You mentioned about USF being a California school and that having its challenges in state authorization at all times by having to look so often from state to state. During COVID, have you noticed anything on the state authorization side at a state level for changes that have been made?
Are you talking specifically about California, or are you saying like being a non-SARA state, are there extra challenges? Is that your question?
Kind of both. Let me sort of clarify. So obviously you're always looking at what all the other states are doing.
Yes.
You're not a SARA state, right? Mm-hmm. But I was wondering if during COVID, any of those states have changed some of their regulations.
I think that's a good question, because some states, especially states that we have relationships with, or agencies that we have authorization statuses with, they've issued guidance that said, hey, we understand that there's this pandemic going on and students are in need of extra support, and so we are giving institutions until this date to do whatever they need to do to support the continuation of students. It sounds like they're being more flexible in the regulations. That said, a lot of states and territories are still not being clear about who this guidance is directed to. So we've received a few direct notifications from agencies, but then we're still needing to look outside and sort of dig up some of the guidance that's coming out of other states. And then even then, it's not clear, well, what about California, or what about students, or what about institutions that aren't authorized by that agency? So there's a lot of questions hanging in the air still, although the general feeling seems to be that agencies are understanding that students' best interests come first.
Cheryl, I know that's an area that you've been curious about. Do you have any follow-ups on that?
No, I love hearing this firsthand information, because we have been working with some of our consultants who have been sharing information about that some states were indeed, offering some sort of flexibility, but then there were other states that were rather ambiguous about whether their information was just for institutions that were located in their state, or whether it included out-of-state activity as well. So, we're still trying to reach the higher ed agencies, and that's why I do appreciate the ability to have our relationship with NASAP, so that we can talk with state regulators, because there are many who are understanding of what SARA does and then not recalling that there are institutions that operate outside of reciprocity, many in California, but then others, sporadically throughout the United States. So it's still important for out-of-state activity compliance to be recognized and shared, pretty widely into the public.
You mentioned, Katie, that you're digging around to try to find these answers and coming up with more questions. Are there any particular strategies or skills that you've been using to do that research?
I think so far we've been, first and foremost, trying to figure out where our students are located. Those students who had to pack up and move out of the dorms, those students who, needed to be home for one reason or another. And so there's sort of a step-by-step process that we've identified for ourselves at USF where it's finding out where our students are, number one. Actually, that's number two. Number one is taking care of students' immediate needs when they're moving to the online atmosphere or going remotely. And that's brought up a lot of pretty much everybody at our university is behind the scenes working really hard to make sure that the instruction can continue in a way that everyone feels supported. So not just students, but what about those adjunct faculty who don't have computers or, access to technology to help them figure out how to, provide good quality online education. And so after that, then it's where are our students? And then it's, okay, our game plan is to see where our students are, find out, establish, okay, is that the state where we have authorization or is that a state where we have some sort of approval or not? And if not, then we need to contact that state and figure out what our next steps are. And then there's, I think all institutions are facing this, but what happens after the short term? What happens after this semester?
What are some key changes to assessment that you've had to try to implement quickly?
I think you cut out a little bit there. Can you say that? What are some key?
Sorry, changes to assessment, if any, that you've had to throw together quickly?
Yeah, so assessment, that's a very good question. This has been going around since we're part of the assessment office. How do we assess how well we're doing with online education, but also how do we assess how well students feel supported? And those questions go together hand in hand. And so the university has been trying to figure out ways to do that, that sort of bring everybody's interests into the fold. And the plan is to definitely figure that out. But the quick assessment, there's short-term quick assessment that happens in teaching that we're able to accomplish through the LMS, the online learning management system. We use Canvas. But when it comes to larger programmatic assessment, I think that's had to take, there's going to be, there will be a delay in that, in assessing, programmatic, how well programs are doing or how well our curriculum is working together, because it's, as you say, it's short term, turnaround quick, like what do people need and where do they need it? And USF has done a really good job of communication. I've been archiving all of our communications to everyone in the university, as to the extent that I can, where I have a sort of time a timeline that I've made that will show, okay, this is what's happening sort of externally. This is the guidance that's come from the CDC or from the U.S. Department of Education, and then I'll intersplice it with communications that have come out from USF. And so far, that I've seen of the pattern, we're showing that we care about students, we're establishing emergency funds for them, and we're really trying to think about on the back end in conversations that are happening, how can we assess what's happening for students?
Well, you've sort of answered my next question. That documentation project sounds interesting, but I was going to ask, what new roles or tasks have you taken on, if any, in the COVID response?
Yeah, absolutely. I think beyond doing the normal sort of look at regulations and check up on regulations that I need to do from time to time, I've been trying to read into what regulations are coming out at the local level in states where, we have students or where we may have students. SAN has been really helpful in getting out, and that resource list has been amazing because I've been able to access professional licensure board information and guidance from states. I believe it may have been the SHIO website, but I think that there's a great resource for checking in on individual state guidance there. And so there's sort of extra reading of not necessarily regulations, but what's come out from states. And then there's, as you mentioned, this idea of sort of documenting and archiving what's happening. And I've been creating a timeline like day by day or piece by piece. It's sort of helped us keep track of what's happening, but also helped us to understand maybe patterns in communications eventually this will be an opportunity for people to do research. And it's not necessarily my timeline, but in working with Gleason is our library, and working with our library and our university archivist, we're also trying to capture the human stories of what's happening through social media with students and through calling out for students to supply their experiences and for faculty and staff to give some of their personal narratives on what's happening so that this can be an opportunity for research later down the line.
So this has contemporaneous and hopefully future value.
Yes, that's better said. Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. USF is a Jesuit school. Does that temper the response at all?
Can you say that again? Sorry, I think you're cutting out.
Sure. USF is a Jesuit school. Has that tempered the response in any way, colored it?
I think it's just an opportunity to tap into some of the Jesuit rhetoric and some of the idioms that are out there, like such as a time of disbursement and discernment. We're always mission focused at our school, and the mission comes up a lot, which is, you know, a Jesuit education and men and women for others, or persons for others. And so it's all about looking out for the vulnerable populations, and that comes out in the university communications. It's, you know, there's so much going on in the world and everybody's affected, and how are you affected? But also, how do you think about other people who are affected, and how can you possibly contribute remotely or contribute, some of your special skills and talents toward helping others in the future? And so that kind of colors it a little bit, is the Jesuit idea of being a person for others. You can see that in the messaging.
Cheryl, do you have any follow-up questions for Katie at this time?
Yes, this has been fascinating, Katie. I have loved your descriptions of, you know, how you all are managing. One question that I do have for you is that, you know, we did a very quick change in September for those face-to-face courses to be able to convert to a remote format. Are you seeing in your planning, as you all look forward to summer term, or maybe even options for fall term, are you seeing that, like, the bar is raised, the quality expectations are a little bit higher, the regulatory compliance may be a little bit higher? What are you seeing in terms of how to manage now that there's some planning opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. Our educational technology services team and our instructional design team, as small as it is, has stepped up so much to offer online, in the way of online trainings and faculty development, to help move courses online. A long while ago, there was an interest in having online courses at USF, and then sort of we realized how complicated that was, but then also the value of having in-person classes. And so for us, I think, and for USF students, who the value is being in person and being online. So it's sort of a challenge that's out there that's met by this educational technology services team and instructional design team, which is to just help people figure out how to have that kind of feeling while being online. Our summer term will be online, as far as I know. And I think our enrollment trends, as far as I also understand, have not fallen for summer. And so there'll be a challenge for fall. But as far as creating online quality online education and delivery, I've just been amazed at how many faculty have stepped up to attend trainings. virtual trainings to be able to deliver quality instruction. That's my answer.
Oh, that's fantastic. We're seeing that there may be some interest in some areas that maybe people hadn't anticipated. Not only interest in maybe some of them that are predisposed for face-to-face are now even more emboldened that they want some face-to-face, but then also some others who hadn't experienced distance ed before that, you know, through this remote are going, hey, I could do some of this. Mm-hmm. In an online format. So yes, building up the quality of what can be available. So it's great that your group wants to do additional training. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how at USF, we're a community engaged sort of learning school. And so being in the community and doing volunteer work or doing community-based research or community-based learning is going to be challenging. But I'm sure that we'll figure out a way to be able to do that.
Great.
Katie, do you have anything else to add? Any other thoughts? There are four of people waiting for your thoughts.
Yeah, I think I was trying to think about what it means to experience this shift for all of us who are suddenly finding ourselves working from home or working remotely. And then I started starting to wax on what it feels to have time pass and what it feels like to have, structures in your life. And, you know, so my two cents there is that, embrace what you can about this very different sort of feeling of time, no matter how quickly it passes or how shortly it passes or however you measure it. I think it's an opportunity for everybody to, sort of realize what those values are that you have that come out of constraints such as being at home or such as being able to spend more time with your family. And then I was trying to think of a musical that I appreciated, and I think it comes from the creators of South Park. I don't know if any of you have heard of it or heard of it, but it's not the Book of Mormon. I haven't seen that, but it's called Cannibal, the musical. It's very enjoyable. I might recommend that.
All right. I will look for that. And you know, what you've been talking about in terms of musicals, I would say that Olaf kind of addresses this in Frozen 2 about controlling what you can control when things seem out of control. So it's a lot of musical ties there. So thank you, Katie, for pointing us in that direction.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Katie. And I think we will. I think we will segue right into Cheryl on musicals with that.
With Cheryl, Katie's assistance, of course.
Of course, yes. But Cheryl, here was a question I had. Would there ever be a musical that you watch on mute?
On mute? Well, Dan, I cannot think of a reason why something considered a musical would want to be on mute.
Let's say you were on a plane. Again, this is getting rather fictional, right? But you're on a plane and for whatever reason you have no entertainment, but the person next to you, in a non-creepy way, you can see what's on that person's screen and it is a musical, but obviously that person is wearing headphones so you can't hear. Is there any that you would think this is still valuable?
So it'd have to be pretty powerful acting for me to be able to follow along. Well, Dan, I'm stumped. I'm going to have to think on that one, but you've definitely stumped the musical person today.
I've never done that. I have never. This is quite a day. What about the reverse? Would there ever be a situation, let's say you were in the theater and you said, you know, for act two, I'm going to watch with my back turned because I just want to hear. Would that ever happen? And what musical would that be, if so?
Oh, well, I can picture every bit of Les Mis. So Les Mis is sung through. And so I could turn my back and I would know that show well enough that I wouldn't have to. I mean, it's like listening to the cast album. You know, I've listened to the cast albums for many musicals and I can picture certain aspects of the musical just by listening to it.
touched on a term that I don't know, sung through. What is that?
It means that there isn't a lot of dialogue. There could either be no dialogue or barely any dialogue. So anything opera. Okay. And you know, Rent is sung through. And Les Mis is sung through. Did we lose you?
No, we're here.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. What about, is there an actor who you've seen transition from, say was a strong film actor, and then, oh, so-and-so is going to Broadway. And there was one where it kind of flopped and you saw it coming.
So is it somebody that I've liked as a movie actor that surprised me on as a stage actor? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, Hugh Jackman. I mean, oh my goodness.
It always comes back to Hugh Jackman, Cheryl.
I mean, look at Wolverine and look what he's able to do on stage as well. So he's quite a versatile actor. Katie, do you have anybody like that you can think of?
You know, I was thinking of Emily Blunt.
There you go.
And her singing skills, she's quite the singer.
That was surprising too. Even Anne Hathaway did a pretty good job with Les Mis. Russell Crowe, not so much, but Anne Hathaway did pretty well.
So do either of you have examples of when it didn't turn out so well?
I think if you were to watch the Cannibal the Musical, you may be able to make that judgment about one or two of the South Park creators who star in the musical.
Well, I'm writing this down right now.
It's still a very enjoyable, like I won't sing it for you, but one of the lines is, "The sun is as hot as a baked potato." I think you know exactly what I mean when I say it's a spodoinkle day. So the lyrics are great.
All right. I will ask my daughter about this too. She knows way more than I do, so I will ask her. Thanks for that tidbit.
You're welcome.
Katie, I'm going to turn to you for one other form of art form, fiction, because I know you're a writer as well. What's your position on reading fiction about pandemics during a pandemic?
I think it's totally fine. That you have to be able to find ways to emote. And I think reading is a way of emoting with, I guess, a ghost, you know, whoever's writing on the other end and whatever narrative voice you're hearing. And so it's funny. My husband was saying the other day, I can't understand why people are watching these pandemic movies suddenly, and I said, oh, I totally want to. So if you're reading, you know, what are some of the books out there Jared Diamond's novel about disease, or, you know,
was Station 11. And I actually, because I saw an interview with Emily St. John Mandel, and she has a new book out, and she said, I've heard that people are reading Station 11 now. I personally wouldn't do it, but hey, you know, hey, go for it, you know, to each his own. But that was the one that came to mind for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think anything you can do to, you know, you have to sort of process what's happening. Otherwise you could feel sort of stuck and more, you know, isolated. So reading is a good avenue for that.
Okay, great. Well, I think we can leave it right there. Katie Hoffman, thank you. For Cheryl Dowd, this is Dan Silverman. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, thank you.